Hello and welcome to episode 137 of the Adoption and Fostering Podcast with me, Scott Casson Rennie, and...
And allegedly me, Al Coates.
Allegedly? Why allegedly? Are you a figment of our imagination today?
I don't know what's going on anymore. I feel slightly adrift in life.
Is that because we're doing these during the day now?
Oh, yeah, but my employer doesn't know that, so thanks, Scott. Oh, it's fine, don't worry.
You have a boss? Who is this boss you speak of?
You know my boss.
Yeah,
you've met her. She's someone to not be minced with.
Yeah, you're very right with that. Yeah.
She'd snap my neck like a dry twig. But also I think that we've had at least a 10-day run of peace and tranquility in Coates Towers.
Wow.
And now we're all bored.
Yeah. You need something to fire you all up and
yeah, we need a disaster. We need a tree falling on the house or something.
But that's what happens when you mix things up and kind of look at things objectively and then fix them.
I don't even. Yeah, but this could be. Yeah. So, I mean, for now, everything's fine. You know, we've got a few months before babies appear and things like that. But anyway, yeah. I suppose there'll have to come a moment where I have to kind of confess to my little circumstantial changes. But maybe that'll be for another episode.
Yeah,
tune in to the next episode.
Yeah, exactly.
But, anyway, we've got a guest today, haven't we? We've got a rather smashing guest because it's Foster Care Fortnight.
It is. Yes.
Are you impressed, Scott?
I am. I'm more impressed that you've remembered during the fortnight rather than before the fortnight, because it just seemed to appear and I was like, oh, it's Foster Care Fortnight. What are we doing? Oh, yes, I know. We're doing...
Yeah, normally it's about 6 weeks later and we
remember. Yeah.
Anyway, so I'm going to turn to the other corner of our screen and say, hello, Sarah, and welcome to the podcast.
Hi, both of you. Thanks so much for inviting me. I'm delighted to be here.
Well, it's an absolute pleasure to have you. I don't know very much about you, Sarah. So if possible, could you introduce yourself and tell us who you are and kind of why you're here?
In no more than 5 words.
It's a free form episode. You can just say however you want. Just crack on.
So, in a nutshell, I'm Sarah Anderson. I've been a foster carer for 15 years. My route into foster care was being a foster carer. As I worked in the NHS in adolescent mental health for many years, saw lots of looked after children, and then came home one mad evening and said to my husband, I've had a light bulb moment. I need to do this at home. I want to have these. I can't change enough lives in 50 minutes. You know, I want to foster children, teenagers specifically at home, which I've now been doing for 15 years, as you can tell by the nervous twitch.
Well, I was thinking, if you went to a foster agency and said, hello, I'm a qualified therapist and I'd like to foster teenagers, literally, was there a bidding war over who was going to have you? Because everyone wants that.
Was there thing? I know this is probably, you haven't done a non-swearing thing at the beginning, so I'll make sure I don't say any naughty words.
No, if people got this far.
I phoned my local council, which it was Surrey County Council, and they went, this was 15 years ago, they may have improved by now. What makes you think you can be a foster carer? So I said, well, I've got several years of experience as a counselling psychotherapist in the NHS with adolescent mental health, and I think I'm going to be, let me just stop you there, it's nothing like fostering. Said, nothing like fostering. The alarm bell should have been going off at that point. Nothing like fostering. So anyway, I got off the phone really sort of, I'll send you a pack. That was it. So I got off the phone quite sort of disillusioned, somewhat disillusioned. So I ring the next person on the Google list who, and I knew nothing. How could I have done this with so little research? And I guess it's kind of what Foster Week is about. I just, and also had my blinkers on. I want to foster, I wasn't open to anyone saying, well, don't do it because of this, or have you looked into that, And I didn't even know the difference between a local authority and an agency. So I pressed the next one on the list, who happened to be Foster Care Associates, who went, hello, oh my God, that's fantastic. let me, you know, let us, we'll be round at nine tomorrow. I didn't even think to ring anybody else. Surrey had blown it. And I had no idea, because they said, do you want to foster in Surrey? So obviously I was very naive then. And I wasn't really, I was a full professional. But so then I, then they came, the agency came round, and we commenced with the assessment from that point on.
That's quite, I think that's quite common across fostering and adoption, isn't it? Because, you know, a lot of adopters do exactly the same thing. They ring who they think should be the first person on the list, and then they maybe get somebody who's having a bad day on the end of the phone, or, you know, and I'd love to say it's changed, but in some places, I don't think it has changed that much. Although I'm sure since regionalization of adoption agencies, I'm sure it has changed, because, you know, we would hope it has anyway. So I don't think that's an uncommon thing.
No, and people have terrible experience in the assessment program process. You only have to see the figures to know, you know, there are 160,000 inquiries, which turn into 10,000 commencement of assessments, which turn into 2,500 go through panel. And trust me, that's not all because they're, our experience isn't that it's because they've been discarded or whatever the word is, you know. Yeah. It's not that. It's about the inefficiency of the process. It's about, for my mind, an inappropriate part of the process, which is a psychological assessment. I feel that should be done by experts in their own field, and then a psychological profile sent, rather than your Form F sitting there. I'm going off on a digressing, but your Form F sitting there with all these incredibly personal, intimate details for anyone to access in the offices. You know.
So do you mean that, are you saying then that you don't think the Form F is fit for purpose? Because I have done and do Form F.
Yeah,
so are you saying that we need something different? Or, I mean, Form F is not a prescribed, it's not just prescribed in legislation, is it? It just, the legislation sort of says an appropriate thorough assessment.
Yeah, it's in Fostering Regulations 5 or something, isn't it? You know, I've just actually done a Foster Wiki page on the assessment approval process, which would be useful for people that are going through it. I think that, for me, the part that I think it's dangerous in parts. I've been through it myself, and I think that social workers aren't, they have to wear so many hats, and there's nothing detrimental about social workers at all, Al.
I'm pretty cute when the criticisms are being thrown around.
It's not about that. It's about how can we improve things, and also how can we improve the conversion rate. And so many people come to me. I see a lot of people through assessments, but they get to a point where a social worker is sitting there talking, sort of almost taking the place of a psychologist, talking to them about deep, dark events in their past. And of course, those should be spoken about. But I believe that part of the Form F should be conducted by a psychologist who is trained to do a psychological assessment on that person's fitness to foster. And then that assessment sent, not, you know, she was raped at 16, but she's got over it now, or you know, she's had a domestic violence situation and she nearly committed suicide, whatever. I know those are the extremes, but everybody who comes into fostering that I know have had some kind of past traumas. A lot of them have. And I think that part of it should be conducted by, a lot of people pull out at that point. And I'm not sure you should be taking birth children into rooms separately, speaking to them separately from parents on those kind of topics. There's just thoughts, you know, I'm open to everything. And it's just a thought for me.
I mean, I think that just my immediate reaction to that is, though, aren't you then putting another layer of, bureaucracy, I suppose, or another hurdle in, because she's got to go to another person? Are you then going to end up with a system that is just so unwieldy? Is what we've got good enough? I'm just asking questions.
Yeah, no, I get that. I personally think it's unsafe but I've obviously come from that background. So I've been trained for many years. I've practiced for many years, and I know what a safe environment is for people to divulge very difficult and traumatic things. I will say that some of the Form Fs, I had one 2 weeks ago. I obviously can't go into the details, but they were probably would have been the most amazing foster carers, and I recommended them in the first place, and I knew the background of it, but the wife got so re-traumatized about something that happened 40 years ago, and she needn't have, and it wouldn't have diminished her capacity to foster in any way, shape or form, but it was the way it was handled, not so much the trauma itself. And she just lost faith in the organization, in the worker and everything. They pulled out, and they would have been such an, you know, an asset to fostering. So I think that sometimes, you know, the psychological part of it, just a feeling that I have myself, that I just feel that it should be done by specialists. It doesn't take much. You turn up to a psychologist, maybe have two sessions, and they can assess you. And then that would, the social worker doesn't have to do that bit then. It just gets fed back as an assessment. But yeah.
I mean, we've fallen at the first hurdle here, haven't we? Mm. I've got a friend who's a, I think Scott knows him. I've got a friend who's was a recruit. He was a social worker. He's also a foster carer himself. And he does the recruitment for the local authority. And he said the frustration of the amount of people that he got through the preparation of foster course, had real confidence, saw them as being, you know, normal people with all of the normal wobbly bits that we've all got, messy bits. And he said, and the amount of them that got just knocked back because of social workers looking for perfection.
Yes, yeah.
Absolute, you know, absolute assurances that this was going to be okay, when the reality was that no one can give those assurances.
I agree.
It just needs to be good enough, doesn't it?
Absolutely, it does, yeah. Because also those flaws are what make us foster carers. I was talking to a social worker yesterday who's coming on my YouTube channel, and I said to her, Mrs. Plug. Oh, I know.
We'll edit that out.
I've got to get something in. With the Facebook algorithms like they are these days, and iOS 14, it's like my views have gone down from 4K to 4.4. So, but I was talking to her about, you know, people often say, don't they, what makes a foster care? Why do you foster? What is it? And, you know, the only thing I can narrow it down to, I've nailed it, what it is that makes us foster. It's a thing. And you have to have the thing. And I don't know how to describe it because it's many things rolled into. So I call it the thing. But the thing is, when you're on your knees because you've had maybe, you know, place that's moved on, you know, you're crying in the corner, curled up in the fetal position because of the exhaustion, maybe the sadness, the guilt, the overwhelming feelings that you get as a foster carer if things have gone wrong, or even when they go right, someone leaves you, you're in the car park waving goodbye, just floods of tears. And you're just back in the house and like, you know, can't, never again sort of thing. And the phone goes, oh, we've got little Johnny Smith here, and he's been in the jail cell all night, and he shouldn't have been, but bring him over. You stood up, you cleaned off, bring him over right now. We spare room, get them here now. And it's like, my husband looks at me like, what? But that's the thing, isn't it? And I don't know if it means that you care. And I think that thing is kind of a DNA thing. And I think very often it is made up of your past and things that have happened to you and your vulnerability. And that vulnerability in turn then gives you that power of caring, maybe that more than others have. Maybe you don't want people to go through the same thing as you. I think there's a lot of it that you just feel like you want to scoop up hold and say it's going to be okay. I think that, it's very difficult to define what the thing is. And it's very difficult through an assessment process to define what the thing is and if they have it. But a lot of people are pulling out of those assessment processes that shouldn't be, and at a time when we are desperate for foster carers.
Yeah. Can I bring you back to the story then? So you got yourself approved with an independent foster care agency. I mean, what did you think of the? I mean, I guess I'm going to move on from process because we could do a series episode.
Yeah.
So you're then approved, and tell me about, you know, you've got a an approval specialist, you know, of teenagers?
Well, yeah. So obviously I didn't realise what how few and far between teenage carers are. But we go to, so we go through the process, we go to panel, and I feel it's a very reductive thing, fostering. You know, I can remember sitting there, I'm a real sort of, I'm a cool grown-up professional in my other profession, you know, but I'm sitting huddled up in the place, you know, in the thing, thinking, I hope they approve me, you know, but we were desperate. Of course they did. We got home, and when we got home, I don't think this again happens right now, but there was a social worker on the doorstep with the child. And
yeah.
We had been given warning that might happen. And we're like, yes, yes, no problem at all. And of course, it was a child they couldn't place anywhere else. We'd had no training. We'd had I didn't even know what a lack review was, or a PEP, or a out of hours. No clue, you know, post-it note. The child gets delivered. They scarpered very quickly, just left a medical card. And Darren was, Tim and I sat staring at each other, sort of like, oh, that was a bit sudden to say we're underprepared, you know. And of course, this young lady, and we love her to bits. She's like 30 something now and still a great part of our family. But we all sat there staring at each other. She says, where's my room? And so we took her up to her, and that was it. Door shut. That was it. So I said, oh, you know. Wonder if she wants to come shopping, or should we try and get some food, or should, you know. So every time we knocked on the door, I said, would you like, you know, and we basically sort of just left her for a while and let her just find her feet and everything. But we were desperately trying to sort of fix and to care and all of that. Anyway, long story short, she came down once that evening for a bowl of soup and noodles. Luckily, my daughter was still living at home, and I knew that what teenagers like when they're feeling a bit distressed. So I had a drawer full of super noodles, nothing nutritious, just chips, nuggets and super noodles. So she ate and went back upstairs. It was a Friday night. And then my husband and I went to bed, didn't sleep much because I thought, oh, we're failing already. You know, I'm not doing this very well. Felt kind of really out of my depth. And so the next morning I got up and I thought, well, we'll try and get her up. We'll see what, you know, are there any manuals or anything? Are there any notes anywhere? No, nothing anywhere. So knocked on the door, you know, I'll call her Susie. Friends. Hi, Susie. Are you up, lovely? It's half past 10. We thought we might make some breakfast. So nothing. So then I went down to her. I think she's all right. She's like really quiet up there. And he went, no, babe, she's having a lie-in. You know, she had really distressful time, stressful time. So I thought, okay. So half an hour, I'm going to wake her up, knock on the door again, you know, knock, knock, knock. Hi, Susie. Tim's making a lovely breakfast. We'd love to get to know you a bit more. You know, do you fancy just coming down for half an hour? Nothing. So in the end, went down to Tim's. I'm scared now. And I need to go in there because I'm scared.
You need an intervention.
Yeah. And I went up there and I said, Susie, love, I'm coming in. Open the door. She's gone. Nothing. Gone.
I'm laughing. It's not finished.
It wasn't at the time. We laugh about it with her now. Gone. Tim, she's gone. I said, we've only been doing this 12 hours and we've lost her. And we knew nothing about children absconding, nothing. Of course, she was I don't like the word absconder, by the way. It kind of puts the blame on them. I prefer missing, but that's the term they use. Yeah. It was a regular absconder, of course. You know, they couldn't keep her in one place more than 5 minutes. And we searched the garden. We searched everywhere and just vanished. And, of course, she'd got herself up in the night and walked down to the nearest town. Found my daughter raised it. She's like, we just felt not only that, you know, we had the responsibility that we failed in, we've done it. We had no idea this happened. So I rang the agency, and of course, nobody's there. Then I get the out of hours message, ring out of hours message, and go, oh, hello, phone the police, you know. And that was it. And it was just the baptism of fire. And phoned the police and said, our child's gone missing. Really? And they were like, oh my goodness, you know, right, okay, hang on, let's take all the details, blah, blah. Then they got to the bit about looked after child, and they went, oh, all right, I'll get Fred to phone you back in a bit. you know. And then I suddenly realized, what makes a difference? What, why is that different? Mm. You know, so, and they're not all like that. It's not a general, but that's what happened to us at the time. And yeah. And when we did, you know, find the child again, but we spent hours searching for her. My daughter said, look, Mum, she's a real little goth. She was real gothy and all the rest, a real little goth. She'll go and find some friends in town. She said, she'll be down the river with traffic light Dan. He went, do you think so? Alice, will you come with us? You can talk to her. So she said, show us where traffic light Dan hangs out. And blow me, there she was with a special brew and traffic light Dan down at the river.
Can I ask why he's called traffic light Dan?
Because of his hair. He always had the three colours on his Mohican.
Oh, wow.
I think my daughter's hung out a bit with traffic light Dan as well, so you know.
Local celebrity.
So yeah, so, that was it.
So that was your kind of which I'm interested to know now is, obviously you had that experience, that's a similar experience to how I feel about fostering. Yeah. When you first started, you don't know anything. You know, I think the biggest shock for me was Al and I have talked about this before, when they just turn up at your doorstep. So your supervising social worker just turns up at your doorstep, sticks the foot in the door, says, hi, I'm here to surprise you, kind of thing.
Yeah.
You don't know about that either. Yeah, unannounced visits.
Yeah.
Horrible
unannounced.
Things.
Yeah,
horrible
yeah.
things that they don't actually prepare you for. So, but when did you decide that you had to do that little bit more than fostering in terms of what you're doing now?
Campaigning and stuff.
Yeah, what was the kind of straw that broke the camel's back for you?
Right, well, it didn't take too long, actually.
Surprise.
Three
days later.
And it was, we're still with Susie here. Actually, that's not a good name for her, but she's what a cool kid. So we go to our first planning meeting, really. They called it a review, but I hadn't even had a place for planning meeting. They just left her. It was, you know, I did have a social worker in FCA who I have to say, just very quickly, Bob, he was one of those defining people that make your life, you know. Mm. He was, I think without him, I wouldn't have continued. And just a gem of a man, just brilliant. And he made my fostering career, I would say, when I had him for the following 5 years. Anyway, we had Bob, but I went to my very first meeting, which was a review. So I get this piece of paper and I'm like, what's this, Susie? What's lack? Honestly, is that bad? What's lack review?
That's terrible.
Oh, I know. It was a long time ago. It's improved. It's improved. And no detriment to FCA. Perhaps I hadn't done my research properly. And I know many people work for FCA and it's all fine. So don't FCA, please don't come after me.
We'll forward any solicitor's letters just straight on to you. Our complaints department are really good at pushing things away.
Oh, I turn up to this lack review with said child and have no idea what it's about. We all sit round the table and Susie's sitting there with her DMs up on the table, rolling a fag. And do you know what though? The rebel in me, you know what I mean? I have a bit of a rebellious past and I'm like, no, she's 14. She sat there and so this was very, very old fashioned, you know, back then the chairs were ancient and the IROs and all sort of, you know, that kind of authoritarian type, whatever, comes in and I'm sitting to the left of her. They go around the table and introduce themselves and all these, you know, like I would have had when I was in the NHS, a long-winded posh title. So they go around the room and they miss me out. And Susie suddenly, didn't even ask me to introduce myself. And my child suddenly piped up, oi, you left my foster carer out. So the chair gives her a look and says, oh, would you like to introduce yourself, dear? So I said, hello, I'm Sarah Anderson. I'm the foster carer. And I felt so reduced in that instant, sitting there knowing what I'd done before. And it's not even what you've done before, because some people have come into fostering with very different backgrounds. But I felt so reduced in that moment. You know, it's that's harsh. So, and then they go around the room and they, how's the child doing? And they all give a little bit of a speech, obviously reading from sort of notes they're flicking through frantically, you know, and again, miss me out. And Susie pipes up, "Oi, you've done it again." And this is where I found my why. It still chokes me up now. She said, and she'd said nothing like this in the preceding 3 months. She said, "This is the only woman around this table what cares about me." She says, "I don't even know any of you. And do you know what? No one stuck with me for 4 days, let alone 4 months. And she said, "That family's taken me in like I'm their own, and her daughter has too. And I keep running away and they keep having me back. They're wonderful. And they know more about me than any of you sitting around the table." And I was quite choked up. I was like, okay, yeah. That's the why. That is the why. Anyway, then the chair turns to me again and says, "Okay, would you like to just give us, you know?" So I start to speak. I don't even do anything highfalutin or anything terribly posh or psychological or anything on her progress. And she literally stops me mid-flow and just puts her hand in front of my face and says, "Thank you, dear. That's enough. We'll leave it to the professionals if that's all right."
Ouch.
There you are. And here I sit today campaigning for the last 8 or 10 years. Everything really stemmed from that moment. And actually, it took her 5 minutes for me to come out of the meeting and she put in a complaint about me.
Who put in a complaint?
The chair.
About you?
So basically, not knowing my place.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Wow. It's hard to know how to react to something like that. Because
I had a really, you know, bad experience and I wouldn't be doing what I'm doing today. But I will tell you, it is the experience of so many carers. And you don't hear that because and that's perhaps something for later on in a minute, that pet carers are not properly represented. They don't represent themselves. None of the leaders represent them. And you don't hear the voices because they're too scared to speak out.
Yeah. See, that's, I mean, to me, that's, I don't know the agency for this case, and we won't go into that because, you know, you might thinking about my experience of, you know, sitting on panels for fostering and all that sort of stuff, you know, it probably happens in a lot of places, but my experience certainly is that the foster care was front and center of anything to do with any children that they were caring for, and Al shaking his head. So, you know, it's clearly there's differences across the board, isn't there?
Yeah. I mean, I've had similar as a foster carer. My wife is a primary carer, but I've had some experience as a foster carer. But I think my experience as a supervising social worker is that there's a clear expectation that foster carers are to act and behave professionally. However, we don't expect you to have a professional opinion, and we don't expect you to be treated like a professional.
Wow.
And again and again and again, I see. Good foster carers are the ones who can work that out. And I think reflecting on your experience of coming as a professional, having inhabited a professional environment, and then sort of like being relegated to literally the bottom of the tree or whatever, you know, however you want to phrase it, but that is then discombobulating for people who are going, "Well, hang on, if I was in a different meeting in the next room, I would be, you would listen to me because I've got this, I've done this, I've got this experience, I've got this qualification." Mm. And people just go, at the end of the meeting, what do you think? You know,
do
you agree?
It's reductive, and I totally agree. And it's not helpful. It's not helpful. Foster carers do. I know that, you know, it's often said, but it's so true. They know the children better than anyone. Anyone. The social workers come in every 6 weeks for an hour, and they'll have a snapshot of that child. My teenagers can change within half an hour. They're, you know, 1 minute I'm going to be a pop star and a guitarist, I want to do performing arts. The next day, I want to be an anthropologist or I want to walk on the moon, you know, and sort of you get an overall view as the carer. But it's a real problem. And I don't think we want to be called professionals, but what we need is some equality.
Yeah.
It's about equality, not being professionals, because what does that even mean anyway? But I suppose it means a lot to those who call themselves professionals. But it's about equality of knowledge, equality to hear and listen the people that really know the children, that, you know, and not to make disastrous decisions when a foster carer could have helped that not happen.
Yeah.
Yeah. I often describe the relationship I have as a supervisor and social worker as we're partners.
Yeah,
and that it's not always an equal partnership. I get that, you know, and they get that, and it shifts and it moves, because sometimes I need to be, you know, sometimes I need to be different things to my foster carers. Yeah. But what I often do is I have this conversation before every meeting. I go, right, what are we trying to communicate in there? And I say, I as the professional, I can kick the door open in a meeting and go, I think my foster carer's got a really good handle on this. She would like to share. Some foster carers are able to do that without me. But sometimes I need to clear the deck.
Absolutely.
Yeah. This person knows what they're talking about. Listen to them.
Yeah.
But that, you know,
you have got that perspective. And unfortunately, and especially with the newly qualified carers, social workers, of course, haven't got that perspective, and you know, that's a different conversation, I know, but there's nothing, no detriment to newly qualified ones, but the newly qualified carer with France, a carer friend of mine rang me up last week and said, I'm just despairing, because she really does she does step downs and takes the most difficult children there are on the planet, and she really, really needs that support, really needs it. She lost a social worker, been with her many years. It was an old, experienced social worker, fantastic supervising social worker, total respect for carers and all the rest of it, replaced by a 23-year-old, brand new thing. Hadn't even shadowed anybody else. They're not having the time anymore, are they? Or it's all this kind of firefighting. And she said she sat in front of me and she had a list of questions to ask me. And she said they were irrelevant, really. And she said, Sarah, said I'd burnt the curry. She said, there's so much going on with the children. I'd be rushing to the phone, rushing anywhere, the curry burnt, and I just put it to one side that I'll cook something else with their tea. And she said, and then all the new social worker came up with was, what's that smell? And she said, I burnt the curry. Nothing for tea tonight, then. You know. She said, sat there in stunned silence as the new qualified social worker, like 15 minutes writing that out. And she said, what can I do? I said, like, you just email and blah, blah, get that off your record, you know. And it was like, but at the same time, she's on her knees with the placement, you know.
I mean, it's easy to be down on, like you say, newly qualified social workers, but that my understanding or my experience of employing social workers as well, you know, so is that we need a workforce that understands the nuances of foster care, because, you know, my foster carer is my service user. But we're a partnership, and that it's just a really complicated dynamic that we're all child focused, but my job is to make sure the foster care is okay.
Yeah.
The child has their social worker. My job is of course, the bottom line is the child has to be okay, but I need to keep my eye on this foster carer. And sometimes it's a light touch. It's like, everything's fine. What do you need me for? Sometimes it's a come in and go, come on, we can do a bit better here. Or
do it?
Yeah. And that is just quite a nuance that I don't think we're taught, you know, or we're, like you say, it's something that we need to see in operation before we just fall in as a ex-children of family social worker.
Yeah. Well, the problem is that it's not an equal relationship, because we are such vulnerable, precarious workers. We are, I know this is harsh language, but we need to really speak the truth here. We are controlled and owned by the people we work for, yet we're called self-employed. Mm-hmm. I mean, a judge in the NFPCU case, Lord Justice Underhill, ruled last April that actually we were in an employment relationship, we did have a contract, and that we are in fact workers. And in actual fact, that went very quietly and uncontested in the High Court. They didn't go on to Supreme Court and challenge that. The local government association, the certification officer, they quietly put the unit trade union into certification. And I tried to speak to the press about it, but they weren't going to speak about it unless it was a high court ruling. And actually, everyone very cannily saw that they weren't going to win and backed right out of that. But we, you know, we are in that relationship, yet we have no protection or security whatsoever. Foster carers work in a climate of fear. They are afraid to speak out. And until we get the voice, we need foster carers leaders speaking for foster carers, not the odd foster carer that's chosen by a stakeholder like Fostering Network or anybody in these. They choose them, you know, Fostering Network have Mockingbird, they have the Fostering Associations and stuff, you know, all the things they want to promote. And it's human nature. You find the people to speak out for you that are going to, you know, back that agenda, if you like. So, and we've gone past the time. If everything was going swimmingly, I could understand them. Sorry, back off, Sarah. You know, we don't need this. We don't need the carers. You know, everything's great. It's not. It's not going swimmingly, and it's time for new thinking.
And yet, there's quite a few large agencies out there. You would think would, you know, how do I put this without offending half of our audience? Who, you know, they kind of, like you say, they do all these kind of services, I guess you would call them, where, you know, they try and promote the voices and, you know, raise awareness and stuff. But to me, the kind of biggest issue seems to be, again, in recruitment. So, you know, recruitment is the main feature, because apparently there's a shortage of foster carers. And yet, if 10 years down the line, we're treating foster carers, you know, in the way that you've described, then how can we expect to recruit them? You know,
you won't. And also in today's, I argue that in today's socioeconomic landscape, people are not wanting to come into foster care. They see it as an altruistic volunteer thing. Plus also, I say, very reductive. We want to be inclusive here. And when I say inclusive, I also mean from the professions, because continually we are letting children down by suggesting foster care is a spare room. It isn't. Now, you both, I've listened to your podcast, and I hear, even with your established adoptees, your children, your daughters and sons, you know, who have been with you a long time, look at the bumpy road that it is. Now, there is no way on earth, at least when that child was dumped on me, first off, I had my psychotherapeutic sort of skills and things which I could draw on, but we should not be putting children in houses on 3 days skills to foster. Children are more and more, you know, they suffer more trauma, attachment issues, whether it's today's disconnection, I don't know, but they're very, very much more difficult than they used to be. And I don't mean difficult to the children aren't difficult. It's not their fault. Yeah. They, you know, their behaviours are just symptoms of the way they're feeling. But we need to understand all that. And I've actually, you know, we need standardised education pathway for foster carers. I may talk to you about that afterwards, because I'm getting up a working party for that, because I truly feel that we owe it to the children to have a much better standard of education for the children, for foster carers start. And that's fully inclusive. I'm not talking about academic stuff that other people can't reach. We're working with people that will make sure that everybody's included in that, you know, in that pathway. But we also imagine recruitment as well. We could, if we get that standardized education, people may think they're coming into something a little bit more substantial than a spare room. It is more substantial than a spare room. And we need, if people don't want to engage in education, then they shouldn't be being foster carers, because we need a much, much higher level of understanding of trauma, attachment, behavioural issues. You know, love on its own is not enough. And that's a bit of anachronism anyway, but I, you know, it's just my feeling about it.
But is there a danger, though, if we raise a bar too high, that we will exclude people who perhaps have got, you know, people who've come to fostering with all of the right skills, but just none of the right paperwork?
What we're working on, oh, trust me, it's tiny in its infancy. And of course, you can imagine the kickback we'll even get thinking that this could be a possibility. A lot of people make money out of training. No, the whole ethos of this is Harsh. Oh God, another lawsuit coming away. The whole thing
for your collection.
This is the pile. Yeah.
Yeah. Get in line.
Yeah. So the pathway we're choosing is so inclusive from anybody who's never even picked up a pen. You know, we're talking absolute inclusion, absolute inclusion. So I don't want that levelled at us, because the other thing is they say things like, you know, oh, isn't there a danger over professionalised foster care? You know, the government have so many myths they come out with. It kind of already is professionalised, if you like. We already report, record, go to meetings. We have to know about, and we got every hat on these days. Honestly, there is so few services we can access. There are such a high turnover of supervising social workers, such a high turnover of child supervisors. Carers are left to do, you know, be counsellor, teacher, you know, carer, nurturer, case manager, you know. So I don't think there is a danger we over-professionalise it at all. I think that everyone coming in will be wanting to love and nurture a child, as well as the rest of it.
Because I was walking my dog this morning, and I was thinking about a tweet to maybe stir up some of the murky waters of the internet. And I was thinking, reflecting on my own experience and the experience of the foster carers that I support and work and know. And I thought the thing is that everyone expects there to be a level of challenge and adversity, and you know they expect difficulties from children, which sounds terrible. But what I mean is that they anticipate that children have experienced bad things. That's where their work is going to be, supporting children, and they totally come into fostering accepting that. Mm. What they don't come into fostering realizing is that the vast majority of challenge is going to be with the system and professionals.
You hit the nail on the head. How can you prepare anybody for that? And it's a mess, frankly. It's chaotic,
so many people leave. So many people leave. And why are you leaving? Just worn out.
It's the system. I have never heard anyone say to me, I'm leaving because of the kids. You know, and the really sad thing is, it's heartbreaking. I cannot tell you, and that's heartbreaking for me because I think, oh, I made a difference. I don't think I've been allowed to make a difference yet. And so many carers right now, the crisis is so bad. Six messaged me last week who had resigned. Everyone I speak to has had enough. They're disillusioned, they're fed up, they're tired, they're exhausted. And they don't necessarily express this to services because it's quite dangerous to express things like that to services, you know. And there is this terrible disillusionment sweeping the country of foster carers. And I deal with thousands and thousands. I know there must be loads that are out there really happy and everything, but we cannot ignore the fact that lots aren't. And they're leaving. And yes, we need 25,000, I can get you the research on it, 25,000 new carers in the next 3 years to keep up with demand. And sadly, the care review isn't even looking at foster care. It's looking at reunification. It's looking at keeping families together. Super important. Can't deny that. Looking at social work, looking at kinship, special guardians and adoption. And I absolutely, you know, those things are all incredibly valuable. And the more we can do of that, absolutely the better. However, there will always be a need for foster carers. Mm. And there won't be, soon there'll be no foster carers left to deliver it at this rate.
Yeah, sadly. And I think that's what we hear as well. So let's move on a little bit. Tell us about, I'm dying to say this. Tell us about Foster Wiki. Wiki, wiki, wah.
I don't know why. I'm literally going to get this on record so that I've got a jingle now.
Yeah, you should really.
I don't even know the song. Am I too old?
Do you not? You need to Google it. When we're finished, you need to Google it. Will Smith. It was...
Because we're down with the kids.
Wild Wild West. It's called Wild Wild West by Will Smith.
Okay.
I think.
Brilliant. I wonder if he'll let us do a sample it for...
Probably not.
Foster Wiki.
He's in the bad books.
Yeah, I know. I'd mind yourself.
I know. He's a bit, isn't he? So, Foster Wiki.
Tell us about it.
Well, I've... obviously, you know the beginning of my journey, and it's been a bumpy old road. Mm. Anybody who knows me will know that. Bumpy old road. Been through sort of, and it needed to be that kind of journey. Was it the union I needed to be in? Was it that? I mean, I developed the largest branch of the IWGB, foster care workers branch. So it's called the Independent Workers of Great Britain, tiny little union in London, and all over now. And I became the chair of, we went to Parliament, inaugurated a branch of the, called the foster care workers branch. And Robin Findlay was, who's now the chair, now the general secretary of the National Union of Professional Foster Carers, was chair for just about 3 months. And then I took over and developed it into the biggest branch of the union by far. You know, there was a real hunger for it. In the end, I didn't feel that that particular union was a good fit. They were real activists. They were frontline campaigners, if you like. Foster carers do not want to wave placards. They do not want to, they're not going to go on strike, obviously. Mm. They're not even going to work to rule. I tried that once. They still work to rule.
By 30 seconds?
Yeah. Please tell me that. What is work to rule?
Well, not doing anything we weren't supposed to that didn't include letting the children down. You know, there's an awful lot that carers do that isn't really on the books. You know, supervised contact you know, certain journeys you know, there are certain things that, and I said, let's do a work to rule, you know, but of course it was far too scared to do that. So that was a wild idea. So I had to go through all these ideas and everything. I left that union because it just wasn't a good fit with foster carer. And trust me, I really tried, but it was, in the end, they were much more, you know, they liked to shake banners saying F Boris and up the things. And, you know, it wasn't really, they didn't understand that we came as a package with our children. Not from my mind. That's a dangerous thing to say. I take it all back, IWGB, no more lawsuits, please. So it's been that kind of a journey. So I didn't feel that was a good fit. I've tried a couple of other organisations that I've set up that haven't really worked either. And then I found myself quite unwell last year. And I was like, I'm not finished. What can I? And I thought, what's the most basic, most important thing we need? And it was information. Mm. And it was the access to that information was so important too. For instance, a carer is far too scared to ask their local authority if they can have an allegations policy, or if they can, how does an allegation work? Or, you know, how do I do staying put? What's a pathway plan? All the things that when I started and all the things I've learned over the years, I thought, and the foster carer's knowledge bank. And I can hear some people in the background going, oh, you know, what knowledge sort of thing. But this is a fantastic untapped knowledge bank around the UK on foster care and how it's delivered. How things actually work on the front line. What is the delivery like? You know, we read lots of long, highfalutin policies and procedures and handbooks and all the rest of it. I wanted something instant, because the other thing is, I was getting inundated over the years. My inbox is always full, my message is always full, and it's always carers saying, help, what do I do here? What can I do there? Mm. And then I was helping people in allegations, and I'd be up to 2 a.m. sometimes replying to everybody. And I thought, I'm writing the same thing a lot over and over again. How can I develop something? And also I felt as well, there's another part of me that's sort of like, foster carers are a bit like mushrooms, you know, they're kept in the dark and fed on manure.
I wondered where that was going.
Well restrained there.
Yeah.
It's like you literally only get what they want you to hear. Mm. And I know, I look like I've got my tin hat on. I haven't, honestly. There's just years of experience and the experience of other carers. So wanted that information flow out there for all the industry, really.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm finding all of this really, in some ways, quite distressing, because I think that a good supervising social worker should be the first person you call. You mm-hmm. know, something's happened, I call my social worker. Obviously, there'll be times when that's the point of the issue, you know, so you need to go around them. Mm. But it seems really heartbreaking that foster carers are having to don't feel they've got that relationship, or they don't feel that it's a supportive environment where they can go to people that effectively have placed the child there. That is really concerning, isn't it? And that
it's really is. Yeah, it really is. And it's really sad, because also your supervising social worker should, and as you say, be your first port of call. I've been very blessed, actually. I've had some great social workers, but I still am terribly measured in my working professional relationship with them. I don't get over friendly. I don't whatever, but so many carers, they also feel so vulnerable. And that vulnerability comes from this, I'll tell you what really is not fit for practice, the allegation system.
Yeah.
It is seriously not fit for practice. It destroys good people. And I don't use those words lightly. It's not like, oh, you know, they get foster carers, you will get so distressed. We totally understand how you feel. No, you don't, you know, unless you've been through one. And it's destroying great lives. And also there's lots of, unfortunately, allegations through whistleblowing, through complaints, you know, they're retaliatory. They can happen 6 hours after a complaint. And I know, the other thing about this, no one wants to hear this. And it's like, no, that's just a few. No, it doesn't, you know, it's just a few. But
it's not.
I promise you it isn't. And they feel so controlled by the allegation system. Don't forget that if you're a social worker, people you work for don't own your social work license. If you fall out with them or you're not enjoying working there, you just leave. If you're a foster carer, your license, your livelihood is owned by the people you work for. Before meth.
Your registration is intrinsically linked to the people who registered you.
So you have to be really careful.
I mean, you've painted a really bleak picture, and I've sort of had allegations as a foster carer, which is, like you said, even just saying that makes it sound like, oh, crikey, but actually it's just pretty...
It's very normal. Happen. Yeah.
Yeah. But it was devastating for us as a whole family, even though it was trivial. By looking back now, I see it was trivial, but that's not how it felt. Mm-hmm. And I've worked with different local authorities who've managed allegations very differently. Some, I have to say, within hours resolved, you know, absolutely fixed. That doesn't mean the foster carer wasn't bereft.
Yeah.
Absolutely bereft.
Yeah.
Totally, you know, nothing to answer. And I've had other cases where the local authorities have just let it drag on for 8 weeks. Devastating.
And some 8 months. And it's still, you know,
5 years on. You, if you mention it, the foster carer goes ashen, is drawn by the experience. I mean, we've painted a pretty damn bleak picture of foster care.
Yeah, and
we?
I don't want to do that. I don't want to do that, because it is Foster Care Fortnight, and we should all be being very grateful for how valued we are. You know, there's a lot of talk this week. We're valued, and they respect the stuff we do, and the government is so grateful to their foster carers. All I can say is let's have some action. Let's get some foster care leaders in place on the fostering the board they're thinking of setting up, which is a very important idea. But let's get leaders.
Tell us about that idea. Tell us about that idea, because
you think you've got one. Yeah, and also just before I go into that, I wanted to say that, you know, fostering's fantastic. It's a wonderful thing to do. You can be on your knees. You can be a thing that I can only liken it to. It's a whole life experience. It isn't you go to work. It isn't that at the end of your life you can say, you know, I did such a. You know, I feel so. I'm not going to use the word privileged, because that annoys me a little bit. I'm going to be privileged to do it, but I'm so glad that I've done it. And our kids, and I've got stories like yours, you know, funny stories, but loving stories, you know, one of the ones, children that made the allegation against you, God knows, 10 years ago, is now, you know, we've got two grand foster children that call us Nanny Sarah and Granddad Tim, and my husband's walking her down the aisle. You know, the last wedding we had Facebooked to us via Facebook. It was in Bali. We couldn't go because we had other places. But the love, the incredible experience of being a foster carer, I would recommend to anybody. What I wouldn't recommend to them is the system and the vulnerability and that's the bit we need to fix to encourage more people to be carers, to look after the ones we have already. And it's no good just banging on like they did in the debate in Parliament last week or the week before on recruitment and retention, saying, oh, we just need, we need, they need some more support and training, over and over again, you know, and it's not enough. We need to change a lot. So yeah, now I've forgotten the original question. That's just me.
Why not asking me? Because I can't remember.
Well, what you were talking about, the leadership board, and I'm not conscious. We're kind of we're coming towards the end of our time, and so tell me about the leadership board, your hopes and aspirations for the future.
So they it came up in the debate. Parliament's been coming up quite a lot, along with a few other things, is that we have a fostering leadership board, and we should have had one already, really. I think they've got one in adoption, haven't they? But there is no point in having a fostering leadership board without foster carer leaders on it. And by that, I don't mean a couple of carers that have been handpicked to stand in the foyer and chat to the bigwigs. And then, we can't keep having people speak for us. Mm. The fostering network do not speak for me. I'm great friends with them, and I have regular lunches with a couple of them and stuff, and we have banter around, and I want to work with everybody. I really do. But a lot of them don't want to work with me. And because I'm probably bringing the story they know they don't want to hear. But we have to improve things. And this leadership board's a fantastic opportunity to do that, but it has to have fostering leaders on it. Not people like, for instance, my background. You can see what my background is. You don't have to look at Foster Wiki. I've helped quite a few people have written other pages, but I've written the majority of it with help from others. And, so we need fostering leaders to really, truly represent the difficult things that are going on. And I honestly believe that, with Ofsted, for instance, they should be speaking to all the foster cares about systems, practice and delivery, not did you get enough training? Two carers they speak to about their support and training, and not about systems, not about delivery, not about practice. And I think that's a real missed opportunity, and we mustn't miss the opportunity at this leadership level either.
I think that's, it's an interesting opportunity if it comes available, but if they do it in any way similar to the one for adoption and special guardianship, then the members tend to be leaders of organisations rather than those apart from state representation. Yeah. And, Al and I are members of the Adoptive Reference Group, which feeds into the ASGLB. And whilst it's really nice to have, it's almost like the kind of keeping us back behind a barrier. And the independence of the group as well. I mean, Al and I are two out of three independent people on that reference group. And the reference group can sometimes be up to 10 people. The other members come from, organisation. So,
well, they just, frankly, they come from Adoption UK.
Yeah.
Which, again, that's not to dismiss them, but it's kind of it. That they're under that umbrella and they've got that permission. And so you were saying, Sarah, that how do you find individuals who are willing to speak with clarity and unfettered in a way that they're not worried about the consequences? But how many other people can you name who would do that? People who would lead?
Struggling.
lost for words. Right, anyway, on that note.
You got it.
It's true though. But listen, it's been a rocky old road for me, because I had, when I first started doing this and speaking out, I had so many unannounced visits. And then I had a few things, telling me to tone it down. That was like Ray Rag to a ball, that one. In the end, I work for Hampshire County Council, and they are very good. And in the end, the directors and the assistant directors have great respect for me and me them. And they've got to that point where it's mutual respect and they listen. And, we'll say lovely things like, you've really informed how we work with our foster carers. And it's really,
but there's different forms of activism, isn't there? That's the thing. There's a way of being able to put things where you're giving them the honest truth and you're being open and honest and actually sharing stories of others who are you know, going through similar or sometimes worse difficulties. But then there's the ones that can just scream and shout.
No, that's the difference, isn't it?
Yeah, that's the difference, isn't it? So
there are some that just want to, you know, destroy the system and bring down such and such and do all of that and very shouty. And it's pointless. I don't feel like that anyway. It's not kind of my kind of activism. I actually call myself, I'm actually writing a book as well. Perhaps some of those people can quake in their boots and send me all those things.
Well, it's,
called the accidental activist. That's how I see myself. It's just all happened terribly by accident. And I don't go waving banners. I have done a bit of it. There are some quite funny videos out there of me going in with a megaphone, you know. But it really wasn't me.
Railings outside of Parliament.
Yeah, exactly. It really wasn't me. That's not what I do or am anymore. And that's why I've come to Foster Wiki, because that's my baby now, and I don't have to please others in the relationship who are, you know.
In a similar way to why we do the podcast, you know, it's we don't have somebody telling us what we can and can't say. So, you know, it's but we're respectful in the absolutely, stories that we hear and the people that we talk to. So,
and respectful of who you work with as well, because everyone's got it hard. And, you know, unfortunately, you have to, some of these social media sites and things, you know, just, also, I can't think of a better word, really, but slagging off, you know, the teams, the social workers, all the rest of it, you know, creating that more them and us. We have to not do that and appreciate the other and their struggles in the system too.
But likewise, as a workforce, we need to listen to what people are saying to us. You know, that is I think that's where foster carers fall in the gap, because, you know, like a service would appropriately say to, say, a group of disabled, you know, if it was a service for disabled people, what are we doing well? What we're not doing well? And really want to know. But foster carers, because you're neither this nor that.
Yeah.
Often we're not interested in what you have to say because we might not like it. And
yeah.
But actually, as a supervising social worker, I need to know what do you need from me? And this is what I need from you. Let's have that conversation.
And we're told, aren't we, to reflect and learn on a regular basis. And I think that's a mutual activity. And I think without our voice being heard, we just won't get any change or improvement.
Absolutely. So on that bombshell...
We'll get you back when you've written your book, obviously.
Absolutely. And we'll point people towards the Foster Wiki. Yeah. Exclusive, yeah. And where else can we find you? Because you're on your Snapchat, Twitter, TikTok.
Yeah, I dipped my toe in Twitter, but I've been burnt so many times. This is the hilarious thing about the accidental activist. I can't stand confrontation.
Really?
I hate it, and I run a mile. I don't sleep all night. You know, one bad tweet, and my husband's coming up at 4 o'clock. We said, "What are you doing up here?" I'm like, "I can't sleep." You know, I get really upset. So, badly attacked on Twitter, really badly trolled, and I just yard. So I don't do Twitter, but I am on there. I do it a little bit. I saw your tweet yesterday, for instance, because it pinged up. But I do Facebook. And so I'm on Sarah Anderson at Foster Wiki. I think it's at Foster Wiki on Facebook, a couple of thousand followers. And I've got a fabulous little group for foster carers, like-minded foster carers who want professional discussions and support to support each other. It's absolutely heartwarming group. I think it's about 400, 450 in there at the moment. It's only set it up last year. It's called the Foster Carers Forum. Foster Wiki, we've also just started our YouTube channel, makeshift at the moment.
You, influencer, down with the kids.
Foster Wiki TV.
Okay.
And actually, a lot of, Wiki. So you can do a little jingle for me for that. And it really is, I have had a couple of interviews so far in conversation with, we're calling it, and have a look. It's real truth, you know, real truth and honesty. Again, professionally done, but these are the conversations like the one I've had today where we've gone, oh God, it's a bit grim. But unless we're hearing those voices. So there are a couple of brave ones who are coming on. And I've got a social worker I'm speaking to next week that's been doing it for many years, and she's brilliant. And she advocates for foster carers all the time. So we're going to have a conversation. So you can find me on.
Oh, yeah. That's excellent. I mean, I've got some foster carers I work with that I'll send towards you as well.
Yeah, that'd be fantastic.
Yeah. Mm. Sarah, thank you so much for your time. And I have to say, we haven't laughed so much before or after the interview.
For a while.
The stuff that we talked about beforehand, honestly, I'm bad laughing. Yeah. You are an absolute star, and please continue to do the work you're doing. Absolutely wonderful. So thank you.
Thanks, Sarah.
Bye.
Bye. Thank you.
That's okay.
I thought we'd be switched off.
No.
Thank you for having me. Thank you so much. And you know, thank you for giving me the space to be listened to. It's I think that we need to be listened to more, and thank you for the opportunity. It's great.
You're
absolutely fine. Thanks. Look after yourself. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Wiki wiki wah.